It can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
You know success when you see it, or you think you do, the people in the spotlight. But what about those small business masterminds who succeed at making their money work harder? They do that by having a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, which now earns 5% annual percentage yield. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
Hi everyone, it's Brad. A few months ago, we brought you an episode about the life of the Japanese billionaire Masayoshi Son and his latest project, a $93 billion investment fund called the Vision Fund. It's hard to overstate the kind of impact that so much money is already having on the tech industry. So if you haven't heard that episode, I strongly recommend you go back and listen now. This week, we're bringing you a special conversation with the man himself. Masa, as he's known in the industry, recently spoke to David Rubenstein, the co-founder and co-CEO of the private equity firm The Carlyle Group. Their conversation was part of David's series on Bloomberg Television called Peer-to-Peer Conversations and was taped on September 19th in front of a live audience. There are some real gems and insights in this interview, like how Masa, at only age 16, convinced the head of McDonald's Japan to meet with him. Please enjoy.
You are clearly one of the world's most successful technology investors and one of the world's most successful businessmen. Let me start by asking you about a fund that you are now raising, the Vision Fund. It's supposed to be a fund of $100 billion?
Yes.
Now, that would be the biggest fund ever raised. So when you told people you were going to raise a $100 billion fund, did they tell you you were a little crazy?
Well, some people said.
You had a meeting with a man who was the deputy crown prince of Saudi Arabia, who's now the crown prince of Saudi Arabia. And as I understand the story, you went in, and in 1 hour, you convinced him to invest $45 billion.
No, it's not true.
Okay.
45 minutes, $45 billion.
Okay, sorry. Okay, I apologize. In other words,
so
if you had had...
$1 billion per minute.
What could you have said that was that persuasive to get $45 billion in one meeting?
Well, actually, I said, you came to Tokyo as the first time. I wanna give you a gift. I wanna give you a Masa gift, the Tokyo gift, $1 trillion gift. And he opened up his eyes and said, okay, now it's interesting.
All right.
So I woke up him and said, here is how we can give you a $1 trillion gift. You invest $100 billion to my fund, I give you $1 trillion.
But what is it that you told people? What was the vision that you actually gave them?
So one vision, which is singularity. Singularity is the concept that the computing power, computers, artificial intelligence, surpass mankind's brains.
The singularity is the concept. The word means that is the point at which a computer becomes smarter than a human brain.
Yes. Today, already, computer is smarter than mankind for chess or Go or weather forecast. To some expert systems, computer is already smarter. But in 30 years, most of the subject that we are thinking, they will be smarter than us. That's my belief.
Let's go back and talk about your upbringing a bit. So you are of Korean descent. Your grandfather came from Korea and moved to Japan many years ago, and your parents were born in Japan. Did you suffer discrimination growing up in Japan?
Yes, I had some experience, but I feel now it was good. You know, that made me, stronger to work harder. So I had to prove that I am not different from any other guys, you know, not inferior, it's the same. So I had to work harder to prove the value.
Your family adopted a Japanese name at one point.
Well, actually, in Japan, there was at some period, Japanese government forced every Korean to change to Japanese name. So it was not their intention. We had to change.
Okay.
Had to change. That made me even more harder because I was feeling that I was hiding something. Now, it was even tougher.
Now, you did not grow up in Tokyo. You grew up in a relatively small town, is that right?
Yes.
In Japan?
Yeah, in the southern part.
In the southern part of Japan. So at one point it is said that you were very interested in meeting the head of McDonald's.
McDonald's Japan.
Why were you interested in meeting the head of McDonald's? Did you like McDonald's food, or you just, what was it?
No, he wrote a book, and that book became the bestseller. I was so impressed and said, oh my God, this is great. And the guy who wrote about it must be great.
So how old were you when you wanted to meet him?
16.
16. So you managed to get a meeting with him.
I called his assistant, and long distance call. Back then it was so expensive. I made almost 100 calls, 60 calls, and say, you know, this is my name. I'm a student. And could you ask him to share me some time? And could you ask him? And she said, oh, I will try, but he's not going to meet with a student. And I said, well, don't decide by yourself. Let him decide.
Okay.
So I spoke with the assistant, different assistants, so many times, and they don't give me the right answer. So I said, okay, this is a waste of my telephone bill. So I flew into Tokyo, and I said, I came, because the phone call becoming more expensive than air ticket.
So what happened?
And I said, well, tell him exactly the way I said. You don't have to look at me. You don't have to talk to me. You can keep on working, whatever you are doing. I just want to see his face for 3 minutes.
Okay.
So I'm not bothering him. I'm so impressed and respect him. I want to see him. And if you tell him that I'm not going to bother him, time is money, he says, I'm not going to damage his life, she actually asked. And he said, okay, okay. Actually, he spent 15 minutes with me, talking face to face.
And he gave you some advice, which was to learn.
Yeah, I asked him, what business should I do? Computer. That's the one. If I were you, at your age, at this time of the, you know, this is, don't look at the past industry. Look at the future industry. That's the one, computer industry. That's the one you should focus. If I were you, that's the one. So I said, wow, great.
Next, we'll hear Masayoshi-san talk about one deal he made, which many people consider to be the most successful investment ever.
Success is more than the final destination. It's a path you take one step at a time. It's discipline. It's teamwork. And it's the drive and passion inside of us that comes before all recognition. It's what Stifel's been doing for over 130 years. Quietly, yet strategically, Stifel's become one of the fastest-growing wealth management and investment banking firms in the country. Our financial advisors go beyond traditional wealth management to provide clients with direct access to one of the industry's largest equity research franchises and a leading middle-market investment bank. Because success is the drive it takes to keep climbing, the passion to keep investing, the best of each of us made better by the best in all of us. And that is where success meets success. Start your journey at Stifel.com. That's STIFEL.com.
Stifel Nicholas and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
Okay, we're back. Let's go back to David Rubenstein and Masayoshi-san.
One of the investments you made is considered by many people to be the most successful investment in the history of mankind. You invested roughly $20 million in Alibaba, and at the time it went public, it was worth roughly $90 billion. So $20 million to $90 billion is a return of about 4,500%. Now, Jack Ma is a very distinguished individual now one of the most successful entrepreneurs in the world. What is it that made you feel this was worth putting in $20 million?
Well, he had no business plan and zero revenue. Employees, maybe 35, 40 employees. But his eyes was very strong, strong eyes, strong, shining eyes. I could tell from the way he talk, the way he look at, he has a charisma, he has a leadership. So his business model was wrong. It's the way he talk, the way, you know, he can bring, you know, young Chinese people following him.
Before Yahoo was so famous, you made an early investment in it, which was spectacularly successful. How did you hear of Yahoo?
Yeah, Yahoo US was still private, 15 employees, and I convinced Jerry Yan to take $100 million of our investment. So at the time we negotiated, we agreed they grew from 15 to 35 people, 35 people. And we invest $100 million to own 35%, and actually went IPO and made a great return. And at the same time, I convinced him to start joint venture, board of Yahoo Japan, where we put $1.2 million, they put $0.8 million, $2 million startup capital. We own 60%.
Now, let's talk about one big mistake you made overall. Obviously, you're very successful in almost everything you've touched, but you were making a lot of internet investments around the turn of the century, around year 2000, 1999, 2001. The market went down in the tech crash, and it is said that you personally lost $70 billion of net worth, the greatest loss that any human being has ever suffered financially. So how did you feel losing $70 billion of net worth?
1 year before that, actually, my net worth, personal net worth, was increasing $10 billion per week. For 3 days, I became richer than Bill Gates.
Wow. Did that upset him, or?
No, before I told to anybody else, you know, our stock started crashing.
Okay.
So 6 months after that, our share price went down 99%. So we almost went bankrupt. And somehow I survived.
You rebuilt your business. And among the things you did was you bought some very well-known companies. So you bought Vodafone's mobile telephone business in Japan.
At that time, I said, now is the time to go next stage, which is the internet will become mobile internet. So I had to either get the license from the government for the spectrum or acquire Vodafone Japan. And first I applied for the license to the government, and the government said, no, there is no more spectrum. So I actually sued the government. And, you know, for 1 year, big fight. But then the Vodafone Japan became available. $20 billion, I had $2 billion, so $18 billion short.
So where'd you get the money?
So I convinced the bank, you know, that the Vodafone Japan, I'm going to turn around and become successful and become great cash flow. Believe me and lend me money.
And they did.
They did.
And it turned out to be very successful. Recently, you did the biggest investment you've ever made in a company called ARM, ARM, which is a semiconductor manufacturer based in London. Why did you spend $31 billion buying a semiconductor manufacturer when many people think that that's not the future?
It's actually $34 billion.
34.
Yeah. It's not the manufacturer. It's a design house. They design all the chipset. They have 99% market share for any smartphone that you have in your pocket. Is ARM has 99% market share, right? In next 20 years, it's going to be, they're going to ship 1 trillion chips, designed for 1 trillion chips. So I said, this is the company. This is, you know, nobody can live in the, on the earth anymore without chip. Chip is everywhere, in the car, in your refrigerator, everywhere. So if chip is something that everybody needs, and if there is one company has 90% market share, there must be a value. They're not monetizing well enough, but if I own it, we can monetize much better. So that's my belief. So I think it's, the company is going to be more valuable than Google.
So let me ask you.
It's not available. It's a private company now.
Now, in the future, you are a big believer in robots. It is your view, I guess, that artificial intelligence is a good thing and ultimately will not hurt humanity. Is that correct?
Right.
So you don't worry that, that robots could become so smart they could wipe out humanity, as some people worry.
Yeah, there is a danger of that. There is a danger. But if you look at the mankind history, people were killing each other with many battles among different tribes and race and so on. But today's world, we don't have that kind of things everyday life. We are more civilized. So when the robot super intelligence go beyond mankind's intelligence, and they say, well, fighting is the not efficient way of living. The harmony is better. It's more social. So we're going to live in harmony, and they think about us. They help us, and they try to amuse us and have a good love each other.
What gives you the greatest pleasure in the world?
Well, the thing is, you know, I have a vision. I have a vision of singularity that's really coming. So we create a vision fund, right? We go and change the world together and create a better world for human living. So that excites me, you know, what is thinking about, what is the future? What is the, how we can change the life of people for the better humanity? So that people don't need to die for unnecessary reasons, like having accident or having the disease or having the disaster, to protect human from all those, you know, sadness is a good thing, right? So imagining those things and investing and create a group and having great product, great solution, is exciting.
And now today, you've come back and you have enormous net worth by any human standards, one of the richest men in the world. What do you do with all this money?
Well, I haven't decided what to do.
You haven't decided, but you're 60 years old now. You've got to decide at some point.
Deciding how to spend with respect is more difficult than making money. That was a headache I had when I you know, became so rich.
When you were the richest man in the world, you had that headache, then you lost that headache, now you've got it again, right? Do you have any plans to keep doing this for another 10 years or 20 years?
Yeah, in my age of 19, I created 50 years my life plan, and in my age of 60s, from between 60 and 69, I would decide my successor and have my successor keep on running it. So in my next 10 years, I have to do that. But even after I find a successor and give him a baton to run as a captainship, I would probably stay working with him, coaching him, and you know, as long as I live, probably I cannot forget about this excitement.
Your parents are still alive. They must be extremely proud of you.
Well, they're actually very proud of me, and they are very happy. We are a happy family. And, you know, we don't live together, but they they call me occasionally, and you know, my dad is funny guy. He has a unique idea, crazy idea, and he always call me and say, "Masa, I got an idea. You have to do this." He knows everything I'm doing, and he's very creative, very smart, and he talk about business to me all the time.
Now, you are Japanese, and but you're of Korean descent. But you're different than most Japanese business people who are very consensus-oriented, not maybe as entrepreneurial as you are. Has that been a challenge for you in building up your business in Japan?
Yeah, lots of challenge. But the uniqueness is actually good. You know, if the pack of other people are this way, I am unique, I have more opportunity. So the difficulty turn, if you flip over, become the advantage.
So a final question, if you could live your life over, an extraordinary story, is there anything you would do differently than you've done?
I may, but this is the life I'm enjoying so much that I would love to do it again. I was so lucky. I was so close to, you know, fall down from the cliff. So I don't know how I can do it twice.
Wow.
But this is definitely an exciting life. I'm having fun.
And that's it for this week's Decrypted. Thanks for listening. We always like to hear what you think of the show. Send us an email at decrypted@bloomberg.net or on Twitter. I'm @Brad Stone. And if you haven't already, please take a moment to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. It really helps new listeners find our show. This episode was produced by Pia Gadkari, Liz Smith, and Magnus Henriksen. The David Rubenstein Show, which provided excerpts for our podcast, was produced by Matthew Saul. You can watch the full interview at Bloomberg.com. Just look for the David Rubenstein Show on our main navigation bar. We'll see you next week.
It can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
From Silicon Valley to Wall Street, the promise and perils of artificial intelligence are playing out on the world stage. But what will the next phase of AI adoption look like? Which companies, from big tech to startups, will dominate? And where do the risks and unintended consequences lie? I'm Emily Chang. Join me at Bloomberg Tech in San Francisco, May 9th, to answer many of the industry's burning questions, alongside Snap's Evan Spiegel, Xbox President Sarah Bond, OpenAI's Brad Lightcap, top researcher Dr. Fei-Fei Li of Stanford, and many more. More details and just a few tickets left at Bloomberg.com/TechSF.